Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd, wherever you may be in. However you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, filling in for Colin Cowherd. The Herd is brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs. Be a sub above. And Jersey Mike's delivering subs today. My man Greg Tuohy, Ryan Music. We need to have a sub discussion, right? Like your favorite subs. And if your favorite cheese on your sub is your favorite cheese, right? Like, it's like no one would order provolone by itself. You'd be like, do you have a cheese plate with provolone? But you put provolone on ham or turkey sub, and now it's magical. Is that fair? Music, your favorite sub, you're most excited, you're salivating over, what is your favorite sub?
It's funny, we actually had a very, very brief discussion about this before the show. You had mentioned your son's affinity for meatball subs, and I could not agree more. I love a good meatball sub.
Right, which has provolone on it, right? Like most times you put a little provolone on it, a little Parmesan. What is the Parmesan? Not cheese, but she put the
grated
powder.
Parmesan?
Yeah, grated Parmesan. A little Parmesan on them, right? And the marinara sauce on it. But here's the thing, you know, again, Jersey Mike's will tell you this too, like the bread is what separates things, right? Like the meatball has to be good, but you got to have great bread as well. Okay, so take meatball out and your favorite sub is what?
I'll go with a nice, good old-fashioned turkey sub. Perhaps a number 7 from Jersey Mike's.
Oh, 7 from Jersey Mike's. Speaking of 7 Super Bowl wins for Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. His competition this past year was Pat Mahomes, who's been to 2 Super Bowls in 4 years in the NFL, 3 years as a starter, and frankly, was one play away, it felt like, from being in a 3rd Super Bowl 3 years ago. So, look, I don't know anybody who doesn't like Mahomes. He has an incredible arm, remarkable escapability, and when he escapes, it's not necessarily to run, although he was leading them in rushing. It's to throw. He's got a crazy quick release, big hands so he can change arm angles. Like there's nothing you feel like he can't do. And it's reasonable to think that he's still refining his skill set, and the more he sees, the better he'll adjust and the better a quarterback he will be. Right? Like all of these things are reasonable. Daniel Jeremiah is going to join us upcoming in 10 minutes. And I have a thought for you. I have a legit, honest thought for you. And it's this. Can we just for 1 second admit that Pat Mahomes has been in 2 Super Bowls and he hadn't really played all that well in them? Do you guys remember when Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl? You guys remember that? Okay, so when Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl, his first time with the Indianapolis Colts, who did they play? In the Super Bowl, they took on the Chicago Bears. This is in January of 2007. It's the 2006 season. Okay, the Bears were 13-3 on the year. The Bears were quarterbacked, well, by Rex Grossman and for a short period of time by Brian Gracie. So Grossman, though, started all 16 games. But he had 23 touchdowns and 20 interceptions on the season. And leading up to the game, Lovie Smith continually had to answer the question of who his starting quarterback was. And the famous quote was, you know, Lovie Smith saying, like, Rex Grossman's my quarterback. Rex Grossman's my quarterback. Rex Grossman's my quarterback. Grossman in the game, 2 picks, 20 of 28, 165. If you remember, it was pouring rain. Terrible weather in Miami, I believe, is what the game was. Even Peyton threw a pick, 247, but they end up kind of gutting out a win. And they, you know, they got it. They were actually trailing in the game, 14-9 in the second quarter before they marched down the field, scored, and never looked back. Had a 16-4 lead at the half, kicked a field goal early in the second half, and won 29-17 going away. The point is that when I say the name Rex Grossman, you're like, ugh. And then I'd remind you that he was very much on the hot seat as the starter in the Super Bowl. And they played in a rainstorm at Dolphin Stadium. And he threw for 165 yards, one pick, two interceptions. So when I mention the name Rex Grossman, I know that there's lots of Bears fans that go, Rex Grossman, a higher passer rating in the Super Bowl than Pat Mahomes has had in his two Super Bowls. Look, I'm not comparing him to Marino in a loss. I'm not comparing him to Brady in any of his losses. I'm not comparing him to Favre, to Rodgers, to Russell Wilson when they lost to the Patriots. I'm comparing him to Rex Grossman. And it's not that quarterback, that passer rating is the end-all be-all, okay? But if we're honest with ourselves, and I think Mahomes has been honest, he didn't play well. I didn't like their game plan. I didn't like their adjustments. No one did. It's really interesting, right? Like, when things are going great, it's like, man, Andy Reid, that offense, amazing. Mahomes, incredible. Things go poorly, man, Andy Reid didn't. And I agree, he did not adjust. Or whoever is making the calls, whatever, there weren't the proper adjustments. And he was under duress. But, yikes, this is 2 years in a row. He made some incredible plays to beat the Niners. If Garoppolo connects to Emmanuel Sanders, if Garoppolo maintains his poise, they lose to the Niners, they lose to the Patriots, and we're having a different discussion. I understand that's not how the world works. We are result-oriented, and he did step up and make big plays last year, and they did win the Super Bowl, but his combined passer rating is below that of Rex Grossman, who's not a great quarterback and was playing in a rainstorm in the exact same game. It's okay to say, hey, Pat Mahomes is a great player. He's going to have a great career. You love him. But he's played bad. And if you think there's not precedent for it, go back and look at John Elway and how he played in his first two Super Bowls. Both blowout losses. So there is precedent for it, and there is a bounce back possibility. But it's just, like, let's be honest. Even Mahomes owned it after the game, like, you know, it's not all the offensive line. A lot of it's me. I got to make my reads better. I got to get rid of the football quicker. That stuff that he was doing, that he didn't always have to run. And that's what happens when guys get hit and get hit early and get uncomfortable. They run when they don't have to. They start hearing footsteps. But he did hear footsteps. And it's very, very reasonable to say, I love Pat Mahomes. I think he's a great quarterback. I think there's a good chance, it's a better than average chance, that they're going to get back to the Super Bowl and compete in sometime within this next big contract. Maybe even next year, because the AFC's still not great, not deep, and they have Mahomes, and they have Kelce, and they have Tyreek Hill, and they have Chris Jones, and they have Tyrann Mathieu. Like, all of that is fine. But if you're going to say that, use the same exact energy to admit that Pat Mahomes, through two Super Bowls, hasn't played particularly well through most of them. You know, if you have eight quarters and two Super Bowls, seven of them, he hadn't played particularly well. He didn't play terrible at times Sunday, but there was nothing where you're like, wow, he's taking over this game. He's getting settled down. Coming up next, Daniel Jeremiah joins us. Does he think that Pat Mahomes needs to be held to a higher standard? Maybe not by Mahomes, but by fans and pundits alike. And I'll ask him, what does he think Russell Wilson's trying to accomplish? And will Carson Wentz be moved? Will Deshaun Watson be moved? And how long can Tom Brady keep this up? You'll find out next. Daniel Jeremiah joins us. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd. Bucks at Suns is today's Discover Card Key matchup. Discover matches all the cash back you've earned at the end of your first year. It's like cramming a full year's worth of cash back into one of those cash-shaped birthday cards. Cashback match only by Discover Card. Learn more at discover.com/match. Discover something brighter. Daniel Jeremiah will join us in a second. Our boy, our fearless leader, Colin Cowherd, announced on Instagram last night what he's fighting through medically. And we wish him the best. He'll be back soon. And, you know, having texted and talked to Colin yesterday, obviously it did not have as much impact as Charles Barkley did. But I can tell you that he's feeling much, much better. And he'll be back and better than ever. No, that's not him. I'm messing around. Oh, I love social media. At Gottlieb Show is the Twitter handle. No, I'm not underwater. I'm not even sick. I just lost my voice a little bit. That's all. Right? That's what happens when you coach too many kids games on a weekend and then you fly off and you do a radio show and call a basketball game, Kansas and Oklahoma State on Monday night. But anyway, I heard a clip. Now, it's always interesting on how things are portrayed, okay? Because we all like Pat Mahomes. I like Pat Mahomes. I remember seeing him in college, and I talked with Daniel Jeremiah, who joins us now in The Herd on Fox Sports Radio, Doug Gottlieb filling in. DJ, you and I had a discussion, I think, off air about Mahomes, where, like, you know, I'm a Big 12 guy. I'm like, dude, this guy is ridiculously talented, but, you know, a little loose with the footwork, sometimes moves when he doesn't have to move, and unbelievably talented, but a little bit unrefined, and sitting that first year, learning from Alex Smith, really refined him as a pro. In the Super Bowl, afterwards, he's like, look, we weren't on the same page. I was holding the ball too long. The receivers weren't where I thought they were going to be. The offensive line sometimes blocked. We didn't execute as a team. What are your thoughts on Mahomes making those comments after the Super Bowl?
Well, I was actually impressed with the way he handled himself after it was over. I thought there was some self-awareness that, you know, there are times he needs to get the ball out quicker. There's times where he'll bail out of some clean pockets. Now, there weren't a ton of clean pockets in that game, but there were a few. So I think he realized some things he needed to clean up. And you go back to Texas Tech, Doug, it's why, to me, it was such a difficult evaluation. He was kind of that classic boom bust. Now, when you get to know him as a kid, and as we've all got to know him, about how intelligent he is and how his work ethic, character, all that stuff should have led you to bet more on the boom than the bust. But it was all screens and scrambles when you watched him in college. That's what it was him running around like crazy, kind of what we saw in the Super Bowl. And you make some unbelievable throws and some reckless throws. They're all kind of mixed in there together. And then when you even talk to everybody in Kansas City when he first got there, I think Tyreek Hill said something kind of on the record. Like after the first couple practices, he was like, we took this guy in the first round because he was so raw. But man, he worked his butt off during that time. And Alex Smith, Andy Reid, and everybody else that was there did a great job of developing him. But I think, you know, because of some of the injuries up front and because I think they lost their way a little bit in that game. You saw some of those old things kind of come out in that game.
Yeah, no, his bad habits came out. That's really kind of what happened, right? During adversity, some of those bad habits came out. Okay, what's more disappointing to you as a football guy? The game plan lacking the proper amount of protection or the lack of adjustments when it was pretty obvious that they could not protect with five?
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day and thinking about the way to say it. And I said, okay, if you had to break it down, the three keys to this game. And to me, I use three S words, right? You've got the studs up front for Tampa on their defensive line. You've got the subs at tackle. And then you've got the stubbornness of the game plan. Like, to me, it was those three things coming together. And it was absolutely stubborn. And it wasn't, you know, we talk about the number of times they didn't help those tackles. But simplistically, when you see that many too high safety looks, they're just begging you to run the football. You have to run the football. And Kansas City did that when they played Buffalo in the regular season. Buffalo played with that too high shell the whole time, and it wasn't an exciting game. It was kind of boring. I think the weather was a little bad. But if you remember, I think they ran for 250 yards. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think, might have had a buck 50 by himself in that game. Mahomes took off and ran. And they just said, you're going to play in that. We'll just run you out of it. And if you don't want to ever leave it, then we'll just run right to victory. And I, even when they ran the ball, they were successful. They just didn't do it.
Why? I mean, and are we only blaming Andy, or are we blaming anybody else? Like, you know, it's always interesting to me. Like, is that Andy Reid that's stubborn?
I you know, like it, yeah. I mean, Andy's got the con. Like, he's got the full control there. So, and I think he even said as much after the game that, you know, he'd like to have a do over on that one. But you know, I thought they completely went away from the run, and I get it. It's a throwing league, and the analytics, this, that, and the other. But if they're going to give you that look, they are daring you to run the football. You have to run the football, and they just didn't do it.
This is The Herd on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin Cowherd. Okay, let's go to the other side with Tom Brady and with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It felt like they had a great game plan. It felt like Brady had a lot more input on that game plan, right? They didn't really take deep shots. It was fairly conservative. They just didn't lose the game, and they let the offense win the game. Is that a fair assessment?
It felt like, having done these Charger games, Doug, I don't know if you remember that playoff game going to New England, what was it, 2018, I guess, and seeing that up close and personal. And I was sitting there going, okay, I think the Chargers with Bosa and Ingram and their defensive front, they can give this offensive line trouble. I think Bosa might even have been mic'd up for the game, because I remember seeing something after the fact. It's like, the ball's gone. You can't get to him. The ball is gone. And that's what it was. There were, as good as that Bucs offensive line was, there were some one-on-ones that favored the Chiefs. And when you watch the tape, you'll see Chris Jones win right away. But the ball's gone. Doesn't matter. They screened him. They got the ball out right away, and they ran the football. And it just, you just felt like it, you could not get to him. And it felt very much like a New England game, more so than a Tampa game.
Okay, so we make this assumption. Maybe it's because of the AFC. Maybe it's because Mahomes has been to AFC Championship game, Super Bowl in 3 years. We make the assumption that they are more likely to be back. But are we missing what Tampa has built? Because that defensive front's not going anywhere, right? The offensive line has been built. Brady is seemingly ageless. You know, running backs, they keep for it replaceable. They got studs at wide receivers. And, you know, Mike Evans has said, you can take some of my money and spread it around, keep everybody together. Are we missing the fact that we can have a little run here in Tampa, as opposed to the assumption that Kansas City will be back?
Yeah, I mean, look, they've got to re-sign Shaq Barrett. They've got some other free agents. Lavonte David, even though he's gotten a little older, is still a fantastic player. So they have some key guys they need to re-sign. I'll say, I think Tampa's path to the division, I mean, remember, they didn't even win the division this last year. Their path to the division, I think, is going to be a lot easier. When you look at the New Orleans Saints, no more Drew Brees. They're going to be, you know, having to trim some salary other places to get under the cap. So a lot of changes there. Carolina's probably going to have a new quarterback. Atlanta's got a new coaching staff. Like, I think their path to get to, you know, 12 wins is probably going to be a lot smoother. And then you get into the postseason. The thing about it, when you get into the postseason, though, Doug, is I'm looking at that NFC West, and I'm saying, man, if the 49ers can ever just stay healthy, that's a difficult team. And I really think Stafford to the Rams makes them a dangerous team. So, you know, not to mention Seattle's always going to be there. Arizona's got some, you know, exciting young players. So, to me, that's a division I keep an eye on. I think Tampa's going to be right back in a good position next year.
Who's the Niners quarterback next year?
I'm going to say, let's go Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold is to the Niners. That's my February 10th prediction.
Okay, so then where does Garoppolo play next year?
Garoppolo, I would say, how about we could go back to New England, or if somehow a Watson trade were to happen, it would make sense with him in Houston. And some of this is wishful thinking. I'm hoping for major quarterback carousel this offseason.
Speaking of quarterback carousel, okay, so what happened in, tell me the real football guy story to Jamie Rutz resigns as president of the Houston Texans today. He'd been there like 20 years, right? He came home from soccer. He's the president of the organization. What what what's What's that about? Why did he resign today?
Well, you know, I just read the story like everybody else did, and I saw, I don't know, if it was somebody, maybe it was on social media or if it was in an article that I read that talked about his frustration with the way the GM search went. And he had, you know, he was part of the committee. They hired the firm. They recommended the five names, and then they went and hired Nick Cassario outside of that. So it sounded like that was maybe a source of frustration there. But, man, when is the first piece of good news going to come out of Houston? I mean, it has been a while now.
Let's go to Seattle. Yesterday on the Dan Patrick Show, Russell Wilson, we have that, guys. Russell Wilson had this to say about what he'd like to see happen in the future.
I think that ultimately, for me personally, I think that I want to be able to be involved, because at the end of the day, it's your legacy. It's your team's legacy. It's, you know, it's the guys you get to go into the huddle with. And at the end of the day, those guys you got to trust.
Are you involved in personnel decisions? Have you been involved in personnel decisions?
Not as much. I don't, you know, I think that, you know, for
do you
for me,
want to be involved, Russ?
Yeah, I think it helps. I think it helps to be involved more. But I think that dialogue should happen more often, in my opinion.
Okay, so he used the term dialogue. He tries to be politically correct. But then afterwards, he's like, look, I'm tired of getting hit. He told reporters he's tired of getting hit. What's the win for Russell Wilson in saying what he's saying?
Well, I think that it was, and this is just my opinion of it, because I've been around different teams, and guys, you will solicit information from players, and players will sometimes offer it. I think when people hear that, the soundbite, Doug, I think they go to the place where they think that Russell Wilson wants to be sitting in the draft room and saying, we're going to pick this guy, not that guy. Like, I think that's the image that they have, that he wants that type of power. Whereas I look at it, and I've been around teams where, I gave this example the other day, where, you know, a quarterback on the team said, hey, you know, came up to upstairs and said, hey, in the offseason, guys, we've got to get some more mature people. Like, you got to bring me some more mature guys. Like, there's too many guys that aren't self-starters. Like, this is the team, you know, I'm in the locker room. I'm around these guys every day, all day. I can feel the team kind of drifting, you know, a little bit. So we need to bring in some stabilizing forces in the offseason. Like, that's very constructive. That I don't know a personnel department that wouldn't want that type of input. You know, it could be something, you know, everybody thinks about the guys coming in. It could be guys that Russell could come up there and say, hey, you know, player X he's late to meetings. He, you know, he doesn't know his assignments. You know, it's an offensive lineman. The guy next to him has to tell him what he's doing every single play. Like, we can't play with this guy. We've got to get somebody better. And that's where, to me, I think it's valuable to have that information exchange between your quarterback and your front office. I don't get on board if you're saying, oh, he wants to go up there and rank your free agent board and all that kind of stuff. But I do think there should be some interaction there.
Yeah, but should you air it publicly?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dan asked him the question, and would you like to be involved? And he, you know, gave a pretty straight answer. Yeah, he would like to be a part of the process. I remember in Baltimore, we were a 3-4 team for a couple of years under Mike Nolan, and, you know, Ray Lewis didn't love that. And we ended up, you know, kind of going back to a 4-3, but he wanted to make sure we could kind of have some size up front, because the Siragusa and Sam Adams were gone. Even though Ray was playing at a very high level, he wanted to make sure we had some size to cover him up, right, to protect him so that he could range and roam and make plays. And we, you know, I'm not saying that we drafted Haloti Ngata because of that, but I think that factored in, absolutely.
The Philadelphia Eagles haven't gotten an offer that they feel like is worthy of trading Carson Wentz. What are your thoughts on the negotiation in public that Philly seems to be going through to get rid of Wentz?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't really figure out what the benefit is of having, you know, anything out in the public. I don't see how it helps you in any way. And I don't know where the information is coming from. But when I look at it from the outside, I think I tweeted out, like, what my guess would be. Like, what does the compensation look like? Where could you get to a good place? And I just look at a team like the Colts. They make by far the most sense for both, you know, for Carson Wentz and for the Colts. And then you say, okay, well, if we can agree the Colts are the best fit, then what's the compensation look like? And the Colts are ready to win right now. They want to insert a quarterback. So you've got somebody that knows the system, they're familiar with. He makes the most sense of all their quarterback options. You want to still have a first-round pick to add to your group to help you win right now? No problem. If I'm Philadelphia, I'm saying I'd like to get a one out of this deal. But I'm not married to that one being a 2021 one. You know, if you want to put a one out into the future and give me a mid-round pick this year, to me, that's something that makes sense for everybody.
It's interesting. Like, there's the Bears and the Colts, and there are people like, well, if the Bears get them, they know what they're doing, right? Whereas they come from kind of same similar school of thought. You know, they obviously try to get Foles last. They got Foles last year.
Yeah.
Whereas the Colts get them like they're geniuses. Do you know they have in the last three seasons, they have the exact same records?
And how about that?
And the Colts, two playoff appearances, one playoff win. The Bears, Pace and Nagy, 28-20, same record, one division title, two playoff appearances, no playoff wins, but one was the double doinker, right? So, I mean, it's really interesting on how those appear to be the two teams. Okay, so let's say Philadelphia moves off of Wentz. Is Jalen Hurts the quarterback, or do they draft one?
Well, that to me is why I think it makes sense to try and accumulate assets next year, right? So you kind of give yourself a chance to see, you know, what you have in Jalen Hurts for a year, you know, roll it out there, see what it looks like. And then you'd have multiple ones in the following year. If you needed to go back into the quarterback market, you'd have some ammunition to move around to potentially do that. So that to me makes some sense. I think they're kind of, you know, where they're positioned in the draft, you know, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, but the chance they get there. You know, to me, it makes sense just to kind of see what you have with Jalen Hurts for a year.
Dallas Cowboys, Troy Aikman thinks they're close. Are they?
I said this the other day, Doug, because we just saw Tampa win a Super Bowl, right? Because they had a major upgrade at the quarterback position. So when you look around the league and look at the changes at quarterback, now I think that Stafford is an upgrade over Jared Goff, no doubt. But when I look at the Dallas Cowboys, just having Dak back, I think is a massive upgrade for them. When you look around the league, I'd say no team has gotten better at quarterback than they would with Dak. And I appreciate the couple good starts that you had there from Andy Dalton, but he's not nearly as talented as Dak Prescott.
I understand, so. But they haven't been a good team in 2 years with him, without him. You know, it's like even before he got hurt, they came back against the Falcons, who are a bad team. So I'm not saying that Dak is terrible.
But their defense, when Dak was playing last year, that was the beginning of the Mike Nolan, you know, defense that was atrocious. I mean,
agreed.
They were awful.
Agreed.
And Dak was throwing it all over the place. We've only got to see him with that group, right, with CeeDee Lamb in the mix there. We've only got to see that a little bit. I'm telling you, CeeDee Lamb is going to be a monster with him, with Dak Prescott for a whole year. So, you know, look, they have other holes in their roster. I don't think they're a complete team by any stretch. But I do think Dak being healthy for a whole year, he's going to throw for 5,000. They've got to fix their defense. That's their challenge.
Okay, your challenge covering the upcoming draft. Daniel Jeremiah joining us, NFL Network. He became a draft superstar last year. Those of us who follow football have known he's a superstar long before that. Okay, but last year your name became synonymous with the draft. How challenging is it this year, considering, you know, some of the best players opted out, so you got some of those guys you have to evaluate. They didn't play a season of football. And so the ones that did play aren't playing against sometimes the elite level of talent. You don't have the same volume of reps to look at. Like, how challenging is this year's draft in comparison to previous year's drafts?
It's really hard. It's really hard for me, you know, selfishly, because – you know, I didn't get a chance to see any college games. Normally, I'll get out to a handful of games and see these guys in person. So you miss that. You know, there's no East-West game, which is kind of more those mid-round guys, but don't get a chance to see those guys in person. Not going to get a chance to see everybody at the Combine, which for me was valuable because that's, you know, not going around to schools as a scout to be in one building and body type these guys, see quarterbacks throw live, see guys move around through DB drills. Like, That's valuable to have that in-person experience. And then pro days, like, we'll cover pro days from home. So, and now that's just me selfishly. Okay, who cares about me? But the teams, they don't get a chance to see these guys at the combine. They're going to be limited in the number of people they can get out to these pro days. So, I think, Doug, this year, the character and some of the background on these players is going to carry more weight. I was talking with a GM about this the other day. He said, look, this year we're going to be a little bit more focused on the floor than the ceiling. You know, like, this guy, okay, this guy's this guy played this fall, so we saw him. Let's say he played in the SEC, so we saw him play this year. We saw him play a significant number of games. We know that he's a great kid. Like, maybe he's not an A player, but we're not going to miss on him. So maybe that pushes some of those guys up the board.
Trevor Lawrence, your expectations in the pros is what? Is he Andrew Luck?
I think he's a different style. He's a different style of Andrew Luck, and I think you'll see more in a design quarterback run game that he'll be able to use with his speed. I think you'll see him a little bit. I think Andrew hit the ground running pretty well. I think you'll see a little bit more of an adjustment period there with him. It's just, you know, not all the bubbles and tunnel screens that he got that he had at Clemson. So there'll be a little bit of an adjustment period there. But I think he's going to emerge within a few years as one of the top, you know, top 5 to 10 guys in the league. He's that talented.
DJ, great stuff. Go get prepped for the draft. We know that's what you'll be doing, locking yourself in, maybe getting some shots up outdoors in the backyard, and we appreciate you joining us.
That's the plan, buddy. Appreciate you.
All right. Noted Padres homer and NFL analyst, and, of course, he's the analyst for the Chargers Radio Network, Daniel Jeremiah, joining us in the herd. Let's get to Ryan Music with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Always good to have Daniel Jeremiah on the show, Doug. Let's turn to some NBA real quick before we get back into the NFL. The Brooklyn Nets are a fascinating team for several reasons, including a 122-111 loss to the Pistons last night, which makes the Nets 7-11 against teams with a record below 500, the most losses in the league. Kyrie Irving on the team's third straight loss. I don't think we go out every single day of our lives and sacrifice the time in order to be average at anything, and we look very average. And we have the talent that the eye test presents that we should be dominating. They were once again without Kevin Durant, who, going back to the beginning of this three-game losing streak, has been out due to the league's COVID protocols due to an exposure. He could potentially return by Friday.
Look, I mean, the Pistons have 5 wins, but they're over 5 of the best teams in the NBA, so that's not surprising. I think now that they don't take everybody seriously, I think it's hard to change a team on the fly. They don't really have practice time. They didn't have a preseason together. And, oh, yeah, by the way, they're not particularly – when you two of your three best players are terrible defensively, that's going to be hard to navigate. But I also don't think this roster is complete. I think there's plenty of time for them to figure it out.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up here with a story out of the NFL that you had mentioned with Daniel Jeremiah. Something very interesting, as all interesting stories continue to come out of Houston and the Houston Texans. Team president Jamie Rutes, who has been with the team for a long time, he oversaw the start of the expansion franchise and had a great deal to do with their financial success since becoming an expansion franchise in the NFL, has resigned. And as Pro Football Talk has reported, it has to do with his displeasure regarding their search for a new general manager. He was a part of hiring the search committee, and then they ultimately ignored the recommendation of the search committee when they hired Nick Caserio. He was persuaded by now team owner Cal McNair to stay in order to try and maintain the perception that this was not a dysfunctional organization.
I mean, like, look, that guy's like, I'm out. And he sounded like Mark Cuban when you was in Shark Tank, right?
And for that reason,
I'm out, right? That's what he should have done instead of Mamba out. For that reason, I'm out. Does not look good for Jack Easterby. What is going on with the cult of the Houston Texans? That really is, right?
Well, I mean, we see this so many times where a business has some success when it's run by the father and then the son takes over and it's never been quite the same. Now, it's been a very short period of time since Cal McNair has taken the major ownership role after the passing of his father. But in that short period of time, it has been nothing but almost total and complete chaos, which does not bode well for what you would consider his tenure as the leader of the team.
It doesn't, but you know, you hire a GM that comes from an organization that figured out a way to get to the playoffs consistently for 20 years straight. Like, in terms of football, let's just see how it plays out before we make all these damning condemnations over the progress of the Texans. Fair? I think so. And that's my music with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
No matter how hard they try, the Eagles, well, they keep making their quarterback less valuable. I'll explain in a moment. But first, in every relationship, there's a short list of forgivable offenses. But missing the most romantic day of the year isn't one of them. Valentine's is here. So don't wait. Head to 1-800-Flowers.com today. Right now, 1-800-Flowers has a last-minute offer.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin Furst. For all you last-minute Valentine's Day needs shoppers, head to 1-800-Flowers right now. Get 24 multicolored roses for $34.99 or upgrade to 24 red roses for $10 more. To order, go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click on the radio icon, enter the code HERD. Colin is big on real estate. By the way, quick get well to my good friend Colin Cowherd. I mean, I guess I could go on and on and tell you how much I think of the guy, but I think a great deal of him. He's a really, really good human being and thoughtful, kind, considerate. He's a good dude. And, you know, there's a lot of people I've worked with in this industry, and most of them, by and large, are all kind of pretty good guys. But Colin is, he's a special breed, man. He really, really is. But Colin is, he's much better at the real estate thing than I am. Right? He just is. He always has been. He's kind of got this little magic touch with real estate. And I'm fascinated by it as well. There's something called chasing the market. Okay. And I think there's going to be a lot of people here over the next 6 months that are going to chase the market because they've seen no matter where you live, real estate's usually doing pretty well. Like even in places that people are leaving, real estate's doing well because interest rates are all-time low. People figure themselves like, look, I get out of this house, make some money, use that cash, put it down. Now I'm actually paying less per month for a bigger, better place that's more expensive. That's the thinking. So you see your neighbor's house across the street sell for, you know, $100,000 more than you thought. Like, it's a $400,000 house. Sold for $525,000. And you're like, my house is better than that. Right? I mean, look at my house. I mean, we got a pool. We got a yard. You know, I got a, all the bedrooms are en suite. You know, redone kitchen. Honey, let's move the house. Like, the market is unbelievable. All right? So you talk to a realtor and the realtor's like, look, if you do the comps, your house is nice, okay? It's redone, but that one is a little bit, the lot is a little bit nicer. The build quality is a little bit better. The master's a little bit nicer. Like, all right, fine. But like, that's the comp. It's about the same size. This is what I want to get for it. They got 525. Let's list it for 550. The market's going up. And the realtor's going like, you could, if you do it 499, you're going to make plenty of money. You're going to move that sucker. So you list your house. And then your wife's like, okay, we're going to start calculating. All right, we'll get 550 for the house. We made X on the house. I can use that for the down payment. She puts an offer on a house that's worth 650. Why not, right? You're actually going to pay less per month. Better house, better neighborhood, better school system. Everything's better. And you're not spending a dime you don't already have because you're making profit on this house and you're actually paying less per month. All makes sense. All the sense in the world. Here's the problem. At some point in time, somebody goes like, yeah, I don't, that house sold, but they had a specific buyer that fell in love and probably overpaid slightly for it. Somebody that moved in from out of the market, you know, they moved in from LA and they were like, $500,000 for a house? Here, take my money. I take it all. Easy. Cash only. The Eagles are the guy that lists their house for $25,000-$30,000 more than their neighbor's house, knowing it's worth probably $50,000 to $75,000 less. That's what they're doing with Carson Wentz. They see what the Lions got for Matt Stafford, and they're like, look, Stafford's good. He's been in the league a long time, but he was never an MVP. This guy was an MVP, and we're going to take a good chunk. We paid a bunch of the salary. We're taking a hit with dead cap money. And then negotiating in public, all they're doing now is going back to the realtor saying like, look, it's not the list price that's the problem. The problem is people don't know about the house. Make sure it's on all the websites. Make sure it's in the Sunday paper. Make sure it's everywhere, on social media, everywhere. And the realtor's like, the problem is the price of the house. And what ends up happening? The house sits. The longer it sits, somebody looks at the MLS and says, it's been on the market for 150 days. Then you lower the price, and now it sat for 150 days, and they're lowering the price. So instead of getting top dollar for the house because you overlisted it, you're going to end up, your wife's already all in on the new house. You'll end up taking whatever and $475 for the house. That's what's going to happen with the Eagles. They have bungled this every step along the way. It is obvious to people in the NFL, they want Carson Wentz out of the building. And by demanding top dollar and not getting it, and then saying, we're still not getting top dollar, hey, you're worth what the market will bear. And complaining about it does you no good. All right, coming up next. What exactly is Russell Wilson trying to accomplish? And with all the goodwill he earned over the weekend, did he do away with it yesterday on the Dan Patrick Show? We'll discuss next. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.